Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
We need to step up here. And we need to, you know, get rid of governments that don't serve our needs. Because when you talk about environmentalism, what you're really talking about is the potential for us to survive, for our children in particular to survive. And so we're asking for a very basic thing. But we have, you know, let this nonsense go on way too long.
That's the voice of biologist and salmon warrior Alex Morton. On this week's show, we speak to Alex about her continued struggle against the Department of Fisheries and Oceans to protect our wild salmon, and about how we can move forward with some democratic renewal to protect our environment. So stay tuned. Online, I have Alex Morton, who has spent over 30 years in coastal BC. She raised her children here, studied killer whales, and doing her utmost to protect the area from salmon farming. She has devoted herself to protecting this region's ecosystems for decades. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, before we get started, I was just speaking with you off air, and just before the interview, some killer whales have swam by you, so you might be distracted a little bit. Tell us about what
they're still out there fishing. Yeah, these are the northern resident orca, and they have just come into this area for the first time this year. So it's always good to see them. Some kind of pattern is normal here.
That's amazing. You know, we have so much to fight for when we protect our coasts, and the salmon give us so much. They feed us, they feed the eagles, they feed the forest. And recently...
Oh, they feed the trees that make the oxygen we breathe. They're actually integral to our existence on this coast, our ability to survive. They're very big.
Now, first and foremost, before we get started on the court case, can you speak to the impact salmon farming has had on coastal communities, and in particular, how the wild salmon have been affected?
Right. Well, salmon farms are feedlots. And so, like any feedlot, they have disease and parasite problems. The really extraordinary thing about salmon farms is there's no doors that are closed. It's all open. And so they just use net pens, viruses, bacteria, sea lice get in there, they multiply, and then they pour out at levels that our wild fish just never were built to survive. And I'm from a little community called Echo Bay. I spent 26 years there. There's no electricity, there's no roads, there's no ferry. The fish farm industry moved in. They said, we'll be good for you. Well, now our school's closed. There's only 8 people left in my town. There's 27 of these Norwegian feedlots in the area. They were not good for us. They were not good for the salmon. They were not good for the whales. They belong where feedlots belong, if they belong, you know, they should exist anyway. But they belong in closed environments. They belong on land, in tanks, with barbed wire around them so that these viruses don't get tracked around. That's the problem with salmon farms.
Now, recently, you and a group of others won a historic court case where the court struck down aquaculture license conditions that allowed private companies to actually put infected fish with viruses back into their pens in the ocean. Can you explain this practice and how frequent it was?
Well, so they hatched the salmon in freshwater and hatcheries on land, and then they transfer them out into the ocean net pens where they grow them for 18 to 24 months, fattening them up for market. And the license was allowing the companies to decide if they had diseased fish in their hatchery, they could still put them out in their farms. For whatever reason that worked for them, they wanted to do that. And I didn't think that was safe for our wild fish, and so I went to court. The environmental law firm EcoJustice took the case, so this is a wonderful environmental society that, you know, pays the bills on this. They pay the lawyers, and we won. The judge agreed. He said, look, the virus that we were dealing with was called piscine reel virus. It's in most of the farm salmon I buy in the supermarket and test. He said, look, this virus looks like it's a problem, and it's from Norway, and it shouldn't be going in, shouldn't be transferred in fish into our ocean. So that was an enormous win. Everyone was very uncertain how this would actually stop, because it means that somebody would have to be testing these fish in the hatchery. And at the moment, nobody is doing that. I don't think anyone's allowed to do that. I'm certainly not allowed to do that. But then, stunningly, the federal government, so the Minister of Fisheries and Marine Harvest, decided to appeal this case. And this raises the question, just how desperate are these guys for diseased fish? You know, in general, you'd think a company wouldn't want to use diseased fish, but what if all your fish have a virus that you think you can live with? You're not really sure what it does to the wild fish, but you think you can live with it. And I think that's the case here, that they just don't have enough fish to have an industry if they're not allowed to use diseased fish. So they've appealed this decision, and this is going to drag on now and into the next year.
And in the meantime, while they're appealing, will they get to continue putting diseased fish into the ocean?
Well, in theory, no, because the court case was won.
Okay.
And so this is a gray area now, because we never did really know how anyone was going to be able to confirm whether their fish were diseased or not. The whole thing is in flux, and meanwhile, you know, our fish are facing high water temperatures and low river levels, and to be bathed in viruses before they enter that crucial part of their life is a very dangerous thing.
The DFO, are they joining this lawsuit? Like, are they part of this appeal?
Yes, they are this appeal, and it's just me. It's
Jesus.
Me and EcoJustice are my lawyers. We tried to find co-defendants, but a lot of people are afraid of this industry. You know, here I am, a biologist who's been looking at this for 30 years. I understand the risks. And like many scientists in the world today, we realize we can't just do the science and then expect the politicians and the governments to respond to it, and particularly in Canada. It's the real dark ages for science right now in Canada. I mean, Stephen Harper closed down the scientific fisheries libraries and, you know, just threw everything out. I mean, I think some of it got rescued, but nobody knows where it is. It hasn't happened for a long time. It hasn't happened in civilized society in a long time. It's up to the scientists to go up to bat and try to make the science stick and make people understand the risks. So our wild fish come out in big schools in the spring, and they go by these farms in narrow channels. It is like taking your child through the infectious disease ward of a hospital before letting them go to school. It's exactly the dynamic that is in play right now, and it just doesn't make sense.
For me, I find it incredible. The DFO is a federal government department. The weight of our federal government is going after private citizens, yourself, who are actually trying to protect the coast. Who is the Minister of the Environment federally, and have they made any statements or responded to this in any way?
The Ministry of Environment has not been involved. It's Fisheries and Oceans Canada. They are the ones in charge of fish. And alarmingly, I was a participant in the Cohen Commission. And what I discovered through that process is there's actually nobody in the federal fisheries who has the veto over anything that might protect wild salmon. There's nobody whose job description is to stop anything that is going to destroy populations of salmon. That has been swept off the table. And as the commercial fisheries have gotten smaller and smaller as a result of mismanagement, and I would argue strongly the salmon farms, then that voice has gone too. And, you know, it's been left to a few environmental groups, but their funding has been pulled, and the Harper government is adamant that no environmental group that is a charity can try to affect government. So they're all afraid to do anything. And our fish, meanwhile, are extremely vulnerable right now. I mean, I can't even believe we still have them. It really speaks to their resilience. If we were to actually work with these fish, and we have the scientific tools to do it, we can actually read their immune systems, which is incredibly powerful. We could just get out of their way exactly where they need it, and we could have enormous runs of salmon coming back to this coast. And so it's very frustrating to me that I'm constantly fighting this small, dirty, old technology. You know, there's three Norwegian companies that want to come in here and farm fish because they got so many farms in Norway, they're not allowed to expand anymore. And so they want to come here so that their share prices keep going up. And really, I just don't see the advantage to British Columbians. And the risk, you know, is known worldwide. But there's some kind of charade going on right now. It's like the emperor with no clothes. This industry does not make food. It is not benign, and it does not create a lot of jobs at all.
When I think of our federal government just as like a proxy working with the fish farming industry and the DFO instead of protecting our coast, it just makes me want to scream. And then we're coming up on a one-year anniversary of the Mount Polly mine disaster, which affected salmon, and now they're speaking of reopening the mine. And like there's...
Okay, so here's the thing. We as a society have gone to sleep, and we have allowed naughty, bad behavior, basically is how I see it. These guys have gotten away with one step and then another step and then another step, and we need to step up here. And we need to, you know, get rid of governments that don't serve our needs. Because when you talk about environmentalism, what you're really talking about is the potential for us to survive, for our children in particular to survive. And so we're asking for a very basic thing. But we have, you know, let this nonsense go on way too long. We should be much more protective of our resources. And I think that, people really need to look to this coming election and figure it out who you're going to vote for. Because here's the thing. The generations that are alive today, we are the ones who are going to either destroy the potential for the human species to exist on this planet, or we are going to be the ones to figure it out, to use alternative energy, to create societies that are actually healthy for us and that we enjoy being in, and turn this around. It is up to us. And for people who are listening and wondering, you know, what can I do? Let me just say, when a petition pops up on your Facebook page and it's something you care about, take that 2 minutes to sign it, because there's somebody behind there that is going to make that work. And when there's meetings in your community about things that disturb you, go to them, because there is nothing more powerful than you showing up. We still, at the moment, live in a democracy. And we need to pick that up and use it. And we need to become as self-sufficient as we can. And I know those are, you know, confusing words, but grow your garden, shop local. Make sure that everything that you do helps your little community thrive, because that's what we're all about. And this madness that has taken over our government, where they are poisoning our water. When the premier went to the town of Likely and she told the people there that they could drink that water, I realized that they really don't care about us, never mind the salmon. That water is not good to drink. There's a reason they have tailing ponds and try to hold that stuff back. There is a craziness that has taken over government, and it is fostered by this corporate animal that is loosed on the land that doesn't really exist, but it feeds voraciously on everything around us. And we need to take the reins. And you know, I say to people, I am working as much for Stephen Harper's children as I am working for everybody's children. I don't know where these people think their kids are going to go, because we are on this planet together and it is in dire shape. I mean, look at the fires. We really need to wake up here.
I think this week people really got an eye-opener where they've been living in a haze for 2 weeks. And then, Speaking of petitions, we find out that Nestle is getting 1,000 cubic meters of water for 85 cents, which comes to about a penny a liter, while we're threatening Vancouverites for watering their gardens. And it's just this insanity. So I think people are waking up, and I think you're absolutely right. Fight where you are, care about your communities. And for me, I just look around and I think people are looking to channelize their energies. So Alex, how can people get in touch with this struggle you're involved with this, you know, poison fish and the DFO? How can people get more information about your work and fighting for the wild salmon?
Well, there's a number of ways. I am on Facebook, Alexandra Morton. I have a public profile page and a personal page. I also have a website, alexandramorton.ca, and I post everything that we need to do to turn this around. And so it would be great if people would help me with that. Petitions are enormously, people say they don't work, but they do. And one thing they do is they you know, we form communities through them. We understand that there's this many of us that care about this. And that is very empowering when you understand that. So, yeah, find me on Facebook or my website, alexandramorton.ca. If you can donate a bit of money to keep me going, that's phenomenal. But the most important thing really is your presence is important at key moments.
And one thing I also recommend is, if you're in the Lower Mainland, go up to the Adams River to see the salmon runs that happen there, and have a look at this beautiful, amazing resource that we get for free that just gives all of us so much health and vitality. And Alex, I thank you for all the work you've been doing and fighting. It must take a toll when you're against such ignorance and a government that's
frustrating. All right, yes.
That simply doesn't care. So, any final thoughts on a democratic reform with this government who's muzzling scientists and passing bills like Bill C-51. What do people need to be thinking about? Any final thoughts?
You need to be really careful with your vote. We have a lot of good candidates among the Green, Liberal, and NDP, and you need to look at who's about to win in your riding, and that's where you need to vote, even if it means you would rather have voted for somebody else. And then after we change this government, we can never go to sleep again. We have to stick with them when they do things wrong and when they do things right. And I think that is incredibly important. That is part of the democratic process. Speak up. They work for us. And yeah, we're about just trying to survive.
And speaking up and fighting for your community and doing your small is incredibly empowering, and life-giving. So I thank you for the work you're doing, and enjoy the orca that I hope are still out there. And
they are.
Let's keep fighting
and
for them,
too.
And, you
know, it feels good. It feels really good to step up. I've got to say, it feels good. It is as good as running or eating well. When you step up and stop being a victim and start making the change and you pass forward the kindness and generosity, it really feels good.
Exactly. And one of our Bolivian friends said, you know, we have to think of future generations. And when they look at us, when our grandkids think of us, what will they think? Will we be the generation that just let it all go to hell? Or will we be the generation that turns it around and protects this beautiful place?
Exactly. We need a ministry of seven generations. We need a ministry who will evaluate everything that is happening against seven generations ahead. And that is something I just want to leave everybody with. We desperately, desperately need this, because the people in control right now aren't thinking of their own children. So we really need a ministry of seven generations.
I will second that, and I thank you so much for your time, and hopefully we'll speak again soon. And I do encourage everybody to get involved and check out your work, and if able, to support the work you're doing.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye for now.
Have a good evening, everybody.
You too.
That was the amazing Alexandra Morton. I do encourage people to follow her work at alexandramorton.ca. I'm going to finish out the show with Rio Static's song called California Dreamline from their album Whale Songs. Bye for now.
California Dreamline, surfing on the big wave. It's quiet underwater. As high as I can swing to carbonated tide pools. It's quiet. Like dolphins helping people to swim, everything peculiar to me, not people living under the sea. Alone with their heartbeats, in love with each other. Tourists drinking beer and coffee. swimming, and things will work out anyway. All the naked ladies covered up by nothing. Californication. Spooning in the dry sand. The sand that gets in everything.
Come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.